welcome to, I'm not sure what week it is, but it is a short commercial break, and this week we are joined by Jeff Polinsky, alongside me, Vinny Gennardi, and Michael Kresge. Guys, how's it going today?
Very well. How are you doing today, Vinny?
Not too bad. Is Kresge there?
I am here. It's going very well for me as well.
Now, we haven't had a podcast in a few weeks, and a lot of good shows have started up. So today, on the slate, we have The Bates Motel, Mad Men, and Game of Thrones. What do you guys want to talk about first?
Jeff's our guest-ish. You pick, Jeffrey.
Okay, well, I don't really watch Game of Thrones that much. I've seen, like, the first season and the premiere of this current season. So don't yell at me right away. I'm just trying to keep up with the times. But Bates Motel has quickly become one of my favorite shows on right now. So I'd love to start off with that since I have the most to say before I fall asleep in the middle of this.
I think that's a good idea because that's half the reason we talked about getting you on the podcast is you were so excited about Bates Motel and you got both of us into it.
Both of you into it? I thought you were the one who got...
I got Vinny into it, but...
Transitive property.
Like, right, basically, yeah, exactly. The day you told me to watch it, I watched the episode and was like, Vinny, bad news, we have another show to watch.
It was bad news because you tell me to just keep watching and reading things and I'm not doing any of it.
Well, because, Jeff, as you know, to some extent at least, we're both, for the podcast, watching all the shows on the Revolution was televised, and Vinny is just terrible at it. He just does not keep up.
I got a lot going on right now.
Yeah, I started to do that, and then I started to read some of the chapters and realized that it spoiled none of the shows, and that previous watching experience really didn't play a factor, so I just continued to read the book on my flight.
That encourages me to read the book, but I still think that we're going to do this just for the sake of... Just the sake of completionism and seeing all the
also
shows.
Also, you should watch good television. I think that's...
Yeah, exactly. It's given me a new love in Buffy. Sarah Michelle Gellar, 90s Sarah Michelle Gellar. If we had a spirit animal on this show, it would be her.
That's probably a pretty good spirit animal.
So why don't you give us just right off the bat why you're so hooked by Bates Motel, which kind of came out of nowhere.
Okay, I mean, when you throw in a murder and a rape in the first episode... Not in that order. But you're really like setting the stakes high, and the whole feel of the episode, the fact that I think Carlton Cuse, one of the ex producers of Lost, really plays a factor into the tone of the show and just the overall feel of it. Part of what I loved about Lost, I loved about Bates as well. It's just the whole psycho aspect to it adds to just this whole background that you thought you knew was there. And then it's just a way of starting a story where you're already familiar with some of the characters, and then it just takes off from there. Although I have not been that high on the last two episodes. I feel like it's fallen off a little bit after the first and second, but it's still great and still very tense and takes me out of whatever I'm doing to just grab me into the show.
I think some of that, the last two episodes things, is a little bit a product of just... of the show is solidifying its direction a little more. And I don't mean that as a good or a bad thing. I just think some of the really appealing things in the early episodes was how enigmatic the town was. Mm-hmm. And some of that they've dropped in favor of this much more focused plot with, especially in the last episode, now that we're kind of fallen introduced to, they have this sex slave on their hands that they've rescued. And I think that's going to bring things back into, we're not even back. I think now things are going to start escalating into much more of like, now they're in a corner. How are they going to get out or not get out? Yeah, and that's a different kind of good, obviously.
Yeah, part of what was so great about the first episode was how high stakes it is. And then the more you watch the series, it's like, are they really going to be able to sustain this level of, you know, intensity throughout the whole time? I mean, they really have done a good job of it so far, but how do you have, you know, a show that's a full season long? Now, you just told me the other day that they picked up for a second season, like, where are they going to go with this? Like, you can't kill everybody in the town. That just doesn't seem practical.
No, Crash, you mentioned the sex slave, and don't forget about the character's name evades me here, but the guy that got shot in the neck. There's just a ton of action going on.
I think we just found out his name for the first time, like, seconds before he was shot as well.
So I shouldn't feel bad about not knowing it.
That's what Vinny and I refer to as Walking Dead syndrome, where you find out everything about the character right before they're killed. No time is taken to develop them, and then you get a monologue about their childhood, and they're shot in the head.
Exactly. But Norma kind of went really crazy this entire episode. She was in full full just speed from the beginning to the end. I feel like she brought it up a notch this episode. She was just crazy the entire time.
Oh yeah, she's way out there. But I don't know, like, I can't tell who the craziest person in the family is, or even on the show in general. The whole town seems to just be pretty out there, and I want to touch on some points with the deputy, but
I was just going to bring him up. So why don't you hit us with it?
Okay, my main issue with the deputy is, and I brought this up to you in person, is why is he so motivated to put his job and life and everything on the line just to help Norma out, who just moved into this town, doesn't know anybody? Like, there's really no reason other than him being a total creep and apparently falling in love with her, as he confessed this episode, as to why he'd want to help her so much.
This episode, yeah, it even stripped away some of the what's he in it for, because, I mean, maybe he's not really in love with her, maybe he is, but he went for it. Like, he totally tampered with, he literally got rid of evidence. So, if really, what is his motivation at this point? And that's, I don't know, do you think that it's going to go somewhere interesting, or do you think he's just a character that's not totally working?
I honestly, I mean, he's working for me so far. I just don't know.
Or, yeah, rather, he's not, like, he can't totally make, it's like, we're just going to have to take the leap that he just fell in love with this woman with crazy eyes.
Well, I mean, this is a man who has Asian sex slaves that he's been drugging in his basement. It's not like he's like, oh, how is this normal guy going so out of his way for this woman? Like, clearly there's something sociopathic about him that's making him do all this stuff.
That's fair. He has the good sense to move his sex slaves to a boat when he thinks someone might be onto him, though. So,
yeah, you get the feeling that wasn't the first time he had to do that.
You just get the idea that he has his spots where he's just like, okay, like, we're moving you here, now we're moving. He doesn't want her to just feel all cooped up. I think he's a very well-rounded sex slave owner.
Also, I feel like without Norman's, like, curiosity, that nobody in the town would really be prying into his business. It's kind of
the... It's not really curiosity.
The overall feel... Oh, it's not really, but his made-up mother that talks to him also motivations that lead him there as well.
You don't get those?
No. So I guess I'm missing out on the party. But the whole town seems to, we've been told, it kind of has like this don't ask, don't tell, eye for an eye, like, we take care of our own things here a different way. And so I feel like the adding in the Bates is that's kind of thrown a wrench into his whole system there. Like, I'm sure he probably had a lot of clients that would come down and have sex with that Asian girl, and just, they were probably pretty hot, maybe even a mayor, maybe even the sheriff, who knows, like, what's going on.
Or Summers.
Like, it's kind of the feeling of, like, you can never go to the cops because the cops are the bad guys type thing. Like, that if you went to the sheriff, a.k.a. Richard Alpert, that he'd just be like, oh, yeah, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it, and then do nothing about it. And
you can just call him Richard Alpert. That's fine.
Okay.
As a rule, we should only call him Richard Alpert.
Okay.
Because he's one of those guys, like, even when I watch the Batman movies where he's the mayor, I always refer to him as Richard Alpert.
Richard Alpert, exactly.
He's one of those people who's always going to be there. Omar is always going to be Omar. I can watch as much Boardwalk Empire as I want. That's Omar.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great example.
Okay, another issue I have with the show, although it's not really, I mean, I guess there is some incriminating evidence against this, is... Why are they so dead set on Norma being the murderer and not Norman? Like, they're both in the same places, work in the same hotel. Like, he very could have easily killed Keith, I think the guy's name is.
Keith Summers, yeah.
Keith Summers. He very easily could have killed Keith himself, and for some reason Norma's getting all the blame for it. Like, other than her hand being bandaged while they were cutting up the stuff, I don't see anything else that points to her being the main suspect.
I think...
That's a good point that I didn't really think about.
I told both of you, my standing theory is that Norman killed his father.
Also very popular. Or Norma did it.
Oh, yeah, those are obviously the two main things. But I think that it's the vibe... Maybe it's the vibe she gives off and the way she kind of, right from the jump, like, just Richard Alpert clearly didn't trust her. And it does seem like he gets a little bit... little bit of a legal vendetta where he's just like, I'm taking this woman down.
Yeah.
And all of his scenes have been, it's not like he's had a varying kinds of scenes. His scenes have all been like, I know you did it, admit you did it. So he might have a little bit of an irrational fixation on busting her for it.
I don't know. I think that that's very clear, but that was just something that happened to pop into my head.
Yeah, it is a little strange because, I mean, they obviously...
Like, even if they still had the carpet fiber evidence, like, that doesn't point to her over Norman.
Yeah, it points to both of them. And they were both doing the same thing the night that he came out and were getting up carpet.
Yeah, they've been living the same life pretty much, except going to school.
This was the first episode where we saw Norma doing, like, work. Like they've always been working at a hotel, but, like, business, like, answering the phone, Bates Motel, and making a website and stuff. Like, yes. I hope season two is
I was
just,
thinking that, too.
I hope season two is just different guests coming to the hotel, and they just have different misadventures and running a motel.
Yeah, when do you think the hotel's going to get up
Never.
And running?
Never. They just finished the website. Who's going to stay up all night? A hotel is a place where you need someone at the front desk the whole time.
I mean, Norman in the movie is up pretty late.
Spoilers.
He's also not in high school anymore. Sorry, double spoilers.
The spoiler I just came up was that he is awake at some point in the movie.
Yeah, at night. That's a lot. You're giving away a lot.
What if Vinny was going in assuming it was about a man in a coma? Yeah. You just shattered that for him.
I mean, now you just
Let's bring it back.
Now,
I have one big question here for the both of you. What do you guys think about the love triangle between Norman Bradley and I think her name's Emma?
Cystic fibrosis girl. You can call her that.
Okay.
Hot cystic fibrosis girl.
Yeah.
She's extremely
just
attractive.
To clarify.
Yes. It's all right. I can say that. A lot of my best friends have cystic fibrosis.
Anyway.
So am I not allowed to say it?
No, you can say it. Well, no, I guess you're... Never mind. There's no logic in what I'm saying, so let's move forward.
Okay, to answer your question, Vinny, I think first of all, Norman is out there with his ideas of his relationship between him and Bradley.
Yeah, he really jumped.
Yeah.
And CF Girl totally handled his confession the right way and pretty accurately described what's going on between them. Why he chose to confess this to her after... he had not gotten a text or answer back from Bradley for what seemed to be like days. I don't know.
Also, very well acted scene by the girl that plays Emma, I thought. That I really like the way she played that. I mean, I think the show is intentionally... I think they do a good job of not making Bradley like the really unlikable, catty, popular girl.
I love Bradley.
She's this girl, well, Vinny, you like Bradley because you're a filthy old man. It's not totally...
Jeez. Wow.
So,
you could have toned it down a little.
I did tone it down. But no, I do think they do a good job with that. And because you're talking about the love triangle. Emma is... Bradley is very clearly like damaged in a way that's appealing to Norman. But I think it's interesting because of that. Is that... What is there to Bradley other than that she's this really sad person who Norman's now slept with and really jumped the gun on thinking they're dating? Whereas Emma's this person that's much more like... I don't even know exactly where I'm going with this. I just think it's an interesting dynamic, and it's not cliche or as simple and easy as they could have gone for. Which
See, I don't think she's as much damaged in a way that's appealing to Norman. I think that he's damaged in a way that's appealing to her. And then he just likes her because she's pretty and likes him as well. Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good reading of
this. And I think he obviously knows that CF likes him as well because, I mean, they've kissed a few times. But I think that he's just more attracted to Bradley. And Vinny, to answer your brief comment there, do you think that Norman is attracted to her or he just... kisses her and doesn't say anything to be not a dick. And
yeah,
then if the conversation he had with her father explains any of his feelings towards her.
I think before everything that happened with Bradley, he might have thought about being attracted to her. But then after sleeping with Bradley, he was just kind of like, this is the path I want to go down. Because it looked like in this last episode when CF went in for the kiss, he was all not about it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
But do you think
and also... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, do you think that's because of what happened with him and Bradley? That if it happened, if she kissed him before that, he would have been much more into it?
I think he would have been a little bit more into it.
Okay.
Because, yeah, he kind of convinced himself that he had a girlfriend, or himself that he had a girlfriend at this point. So that's why he wasn't as into it. Maybe last question or two here on this before we move on to Mad Men. Just what happened to the English teacher? You know what I mean? From the first episode, she was cool.
This is a big factor for me and Vinny. Were really
cool, you mean attractive.
Yeah, but she was also creepily into cool Norman.
Well, I think that, she'll come back.
And that felt like a thing. The way
I don't know. I think it was just to show that this town's kind of weird and everybody was into him for no reason at all. But I was hoping she'd be more of a recurring character.
I think she will be. It's just been one episode.
Well, she hasn't been in it since the first, right?
No, she's in the second. No, and he passed out.
She's in the second, yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
Two episodes then, I'm sorry.
Well, it's still been too long.
Vinny wants her to get her own spinoff, like the Saul Goodman spinoff that's coming up. He's already ready for it.
Okay.
Which, before we get too far off track, actually, I'm bringing us off track. Did you hear about the rumors of a Friends reunion? I think they've been disproved, but there was... Rumors came out today on the internet that there was...
we're going to talk about the disproved of a Friends reunion.
Sources, that's exciting stuff.
Sources tell us this is not real. But
it's like a split vote right now.
I have no problem with that. I think British television does interesting things like that. They Ricky Gervais recently made a 10-minute short about David Brent, who is the original main character, the Michael Scott character from the British Office. And they do things like that. The Alan Partridge thing, which is Steve Coogan's show. He makes like a new show every like 5 years revisiting characters. I think they could do, and NBC needs it.
Wait, is this an actual rumor of the Friends cast getting back together, or is it what came up on the mailbag for Bill Simmons last week where somebody brought up the idea that all the Friends characters' kids would be in late high school, early college years? And that would make a great spin-off.
I did read that, sort of, but no.
Boy Meets Girl, this was, Boy Meets Girls.
This was a rumor sort of thing of NBC confirming it and all of the actors signing on, and there would be 4 one-hour specials. But I don't know. It seems like...
That sounds like a terrible idea.
Matt LeBlanc came on Twitter or something and was like, there's no truth to it or something like that.
Of all people should be into it, but...
Yeah. Well, he's got that.
No, he's got his own show.
He's got that show episodes. Really, David Schwimmer is the one that should be into it, and also Phoebe.
Phoebe had a TV show also,
and she's like in movies now and then, isn't she?
She was in movies. I don't know.
She has like a TV therapist HBO thing going on for a while.
Oh yeah, that's right. Well, the first thing that comes up when I Google Friends reunion is Friends reunion report makes internet implode.
Oh, jeez.
So.
We should stop talking because it's going to make the internet implode again.
We're going to make this podcast literally implode. But I like that. I like, Vinny, that you didn't just bring this up as something to talk about, but told us it was a discredited, disproved rumor before we began discussing it.
Well, you got to get all the facts out there.
Yeah, now there's the juice. Discredited rumor stories.
All right. Any last thoughts on Bates Motel?
No, let's move on to Mad Men.
Yep, I'm looking for... I'm excited about more Bates Motel. That's all I got.
Me too.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, 2 episodes into Mad Men. What did you guys think of the premiere and this... Well, I guess it's technically the 3rd episode on the list now, even though it's the 2nd week airing. What are you guys' thoughts so far?
I thought the 1st episode was good. I suffered from watching it live, which I like to do with Mad Men. 2 hours was too much, for me at least, especially when... Certain plots didn't work for me. I really didn't enjoy. And I don't hate Betty as much as the average person. In fact, Fat Betty last year was one of my favorite ongoing things to watch, as I think it might have been with everybody. But I really didn't... The Betty plot went nowhere for me. I really didn't enjoy it. So some things hit a little flat, but it was an amazing Roger episode and an amazing Peggy episode. And I really, really liked the direction they were going with those two characters especially. And I thought it was a little inconsistent, but I did enjoy it. And I was happy to have it back.
Yeah, it was very long, like you said, especially with the pacing that they had and just how they dragged out each of the storylines. Even with was going on with Don. Like, why leave? I mean, I get the surprise at the last minute of when he finds out he's having an affair with his friend's slash neighbor's wife.
Lindsay Weir.
A.K.A. Lindsay Weir. But I thought both episodes were excellent. This last one really picked it up a notch. I loved a lot of what was happening both in and out of the office. Definitely didn't like the Betty stuff in the first episode. It kind of just seemed like, why do we care about her again? Or why does we care that she cares about this random friend of Sally's that we just met? Like, that seemed kind of out of place.
Do you guys think Betty still needs to be on the show? Like, I really don't think she does.
I don't mind her being, like, I thought her being fat was a really interesting way to bring her back, both in a funny way, and I think it spoke to a lot of what they're talking about, but I didn't see how she was relevant so far, so maybe you're right at this point. I don't know.
I kind of feel that everybody we interact with on the show should be an extension of Don's circle of people that he deals with, even tangentially. Like, I feel like he doesn't talk to Betty or deal with her
exactly.
that much.
Yeah.
Like, the kids are the only extension of him
yeah.
that are there. So kind of we shouldn't be interested in that. But, like, anybody that works at Sterling Cooper Draper Price or Peggy, who's a big part of his life and will probably come back into it, like, those are the people that we should care about, like, those people that Don interacts with. And anybody really way on the outside, like Betty has become, I feel like, is not that important to the story of what we're doing. Because Don's the main character. It's not...
Yeah, well, so far it feels like you're right this season. So it's hard to argue with that.
Yeah.
Right. Well, last season I thought Sally was a really interesting character, even though for the first four seasons I joked with George that she wasn't that important. But then last season she was really important.
She's no Bobby Draper.
Well,
she's no Jean.
Transforms all the time.
Well, no one's Jean. Jean, the powerhouse performance by Jean Draper is...
Baby Jean, well, not the grandfather.
Is it... Yeah. No, yeah, no, I know who you
Rest
meant.
In peace.
So Alison Brie in this episode, what did you think of that scene where she got a little little strict? I know you're a huge fan, Crushy. I'm not sure about you.
That's the wrong word.
How can I not be a huge fan?
Activist.
What's the right
word?
Oh, okay, activist.
Activist, worshiper, I don't know. It's creepy. It's creepy.
Okay, but did you like her in this episode?
Oh,
I can't
I loved
tell.
Her. Her line, I will destroy you, was just... It highlighted to me what Pete's character is that, like, some people, like, react by finding out that they're being cheated on by beating the crap out of their wife and sending them running to the Campbell house. Some people react by telling them that if you come within 50 feet of these house, I will destroy you. You're now my plaything. That will be my husband on command. and that's Trudy Campbell, and I loved it. I loved it. That the whole second episode, I believe it's called The Collaborators. I didn't love the flashbacks, which I usually do like. I thought those were a little on the nose and very much just like, this is why Don is this way. Like, it was very simplified and it didn't feel natural. But I thought the Pete and Trudy stuff was much more captured what they were trying to go with the whole adultery angle. And I loved that scene.
Yeah, and I think that we kind of learned something about Trudy that we didn't realize earlier.
It's not naive.
What?
That she's not naive, yeah.
Yeah, that she's not naive, that she knows what the apartment was about. Like, earlier we might have think like, Pete's kind of pulling the wool over her eyes and, like, getting one by her so he can sleep with all these girls and do this. But really she kind of allowed it, like she said. She gave consent, like, thinking that that was going to be a good idea, that maybe it would help out their relationship or at least...
It wouldn't ruin it.
Yeah, at least wouldn't ruin it. And I think
you just
that,
want discretion, yeah.
I think that she showed a really strong side of her, even being a little bit of a bit character that's not even probably in 10 episodes, maybe. I can't even remember to count. But she was really strong with what she told him. Like, she's like, no, I'm not going to be a failure. I'm not going to get a divorce, but you're going to do what I say or else I'll destroy you. It's just...
She didn't even have to say how. Like, Pete just, believed her.
At this point, you think going into every episode, at least I do, I'm like, oh, man, I don't think I could hate Pete Campbell anymore. And then he has another episode, and I'm like, wow, I actually hate him more now that I've seen this episode than I did going in.
No, I actually like Pete a lot better now.
Do you?
Yes. Like, not because of his, like, the way he works the women, but he's become... Stop laughing at this. This is a legitimate thought that I had.
Jeff, you're stupid.
Legitimate thought that I had while watching this thing. And it's... I have him not being as much of a rat as at work and kind of, like...
That's true.
Being in control of what he wants to do. Like, his interactions with Don and the guy from Jaguar, like, he's good at his job. Like, anything that we've seen lately, like, compared to earlier seasons, has been more, he's doing his job the right way, and he's not really trying to just get one over on Don. Like, he's become more of, like, a contemporary of his than an underling. And that makes me like him more. Like, I didn't really have an issue with the way he was seducing his neighbor, although it was very cliche and just, like, weird. Like, clearly he's not a ladies' man, and that's what he aspires to be, but he's still getting it done. And
by giving out tickets to hair.
Yes. You know, just those naked 70s hippies. Oh, for sure. If I had tickets to hair right now, the ladies would be all over me.
Exactly. It's all it takes.
It's all it takes.
That's a very fine line between success and just loneliness, and that line is just paper.
Yeah, you're either giving those tickets away, or you're like, I'm going to see hair by myself.
The world is made up of having hair tickets and the have-nots of hair tickets.
But anyway, I've really kind of liked Pete lately, and just the way he's been carrying himself around the office and outside of it. Except for being a dick when... She comes in with a bloody nose. That's his fault. And it's just like, yeah, we'll call you Cap.
Exactly. And like, what did you say to him?
Yeah.
Was one of his, I've started liking him more, even though it was an episode where he was unlikable, from the episode Signal 30 last season, which is maybe my favorite Mad Men episode ever. That's not true. The Suitcase is a really great episode.
It's a great Ken Cosgrove episode.
Signal 30 is one of my favorite ever. And it's more where Pete gets punched by Lane and they have the dinner party, and that was the first episode where, like, he's still not a likable person in a lot of ways, but like the tragedy of who Pete is and the way he carries himself at work versus at home is like really explored in an interesting way. So I see what you're saying.
A majority of my feelings towards him have changed because I kind of was watching him these last few episodes and I'm like, hey, wait, this guy's actually pretty good at his job, and like he's doing a professional thing.
Look at how far he's come, too. Our first impression of him was him knocking up Peggy.
Yeah.
And, like, literally just...
And trying to blackmail Don. And...
Yeah, and just not caring. I haven't watched the early seasons.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's gotten away from that, so I'm happy. Because, like, you used to hate him. Like, oh, this guy's a rat. And I've kind of come around on him.
Well, speaking of rats, what do you think of this new guy, Bob, I think his name is, that just keeps trying to brown nose his way into... all of our favorite characters.
Every time I see him, I'm like, this guy's going to screw up whatever they're doing. Like, before we knew that the Heinz meeting was just a setup, I was like, oh, when he walks this guy to the elevator, he's going to piss off this guy and they're going to lose the account. Like, that's what I thought was going to happen before the Big Beans guy was like, yeah, don't do any business with him.
Right. Crushy.
I'm
Bob.
I like that they're directly, like, everyone's reacting the way I feel like the audience reacts, which is like, who is this guy? And he's like, I've been here all along.
it's like Jack Black in that episode of Community.
I was just going to say, yeah, it's like when Jack Black's like, I was in the background of all. Exactly like that. And that they're just directly addressing that. And it's almost this way in for the audience of like, I want to be part of this world. But I mean, we need to see more from him. I'm interested in this season hasn't been as heavy.
His true intentions are just.
Do you think he's the least likable person on the show right now?
He's the most likable, like, real person. Yeah. Well, no. Roger's far and away the most likable person on the show, no matter what.
Well, yeah. I don't know. Ken Cosgrove.
There was that line, we know, Ken Cosgrove. You mean Dave Algonquin.
Yeah.
We had a great line in the premiere where Roger's ex-wife said, you have one of those personalities that no matter what you do, people are always going to be wondering if you like them. That to me sums up Roger pretty well. He's like the most likable person in the world. But I get your point, Jeff. He seems like he exists outside of this in a way.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't really my point. My point was just, like, I think he's going to screw everything up. Like, he's not part of the team. Like, where did this guy come from? Like, what Vinny said, what's his true intentions? Like, he's...
Oh, you said unlikable.
Yeah, I don't think he's likable.
No, I thought you said likable. That's why I was so confused.
No, I think he's one of the least likable. Like, he's so weird and forceful with, like, he's like how Pete used to be, like, trying to weasel his way into everything.
I agree. I was just trying to make what you said make sense for me. I'm glad that you didn't mean that.
You were trying to drive Jeff somewhere. And
I was like, maybe I can get Jeff to make some sense of this ludicrous idea, but I'm glad that that's not what was happening.
Yeah. I'll try and have more ludicrous ideas that you can work with in the future.
Thank you. That I can just completely try and save.
Yeah, wait till we get to Thrones. I'm going to really throw some stuff at you.
You should just yell out anything you've seen. Just yell out random plot points from it and deep thoughts on it.
Okay. Right now?
So about Vinny, we haven't really gotten that much of your thoughts on the episode so far, I feel like.
Okay. I've liked them both a lot so far. I think you could kind of see it coming that this episode was going to be heavy on Don's affair, because it was such a big reveal in the first episode. I think I recently rewatched season one, and I think they did sort of the same thing in that season, where the big reveal at the end of the episode was that Don actually had a family, and then the whole second episode was about Betty and the kids. So you kind of see that coming, but it was pretty interesting, especially the way Don played her at dinner, I thought was pretty cool. You just get the feeling, though, that at some point this one's kind of going to blow up in Don's face somehow, but he's going to get caught, I think. But I don't really think he cares either.
It kind of feels like he wants to in some ways.
Yeah. As you can see, the ending scene of that episode was him just slouching outside of the apartment and not wanting to go in.
Okay, but do you think that he's doing it because, A, he just wants someone, he really does actually like... her name escapes me, I'm sorry.
Velma.
No, it's Sylvia, I think.
It's Sylvia. But it's Velma or Lindsay Weir are also accepted.
Okay, so do you think he really likes Sylvia, or he just kind of wants to get caught and screw things up with Megan? Because clearly he can't sustain it. He knows that it's going to come to a head at some point.
I think he does like her, but, like, she's in love with him, I feel like.
We just can't fall in love means, like, I'm already in love with you.
It means I've already fallen in love with you. And
my husband's bald, but at least he's a doctor.
He's just always gone.
Reading through the lines. Reading between the lines. Yeah, they need to tone down that every single dinner. He literally gets called away.
Maybe him and Megan are having an affair.
That would be a ridiculously...
Neither of them were at dinner.
Plot twist. I feel like you don't feel bad for Betty because Betty is so unlikable and cold in the first season. You can juxtaposition. In this case, which is his first real affair in this new marriage, Megan's so likable. And, like, she, like, felt so racked with guilt over not telling him this thing and, like, just such a good wife to him. And it kind of gives this whole thing a different feel where... I like Linda Cardellini too. You feel like Don has really, like, kind of like how last season was almost about Don losing his mojo. This season's almost about, like, kind of the pathetic desperation of what's going on. Not in that it's pathetic, like oh, this is sickening. What's his moral compass? Pathetic, like, this is going to blow up and ruin your life. Like, you're Don Draper. You can only do this so long. And
how
like,
much of a life does he really have with Megan? Like, it seems like a pretty easy reset. Of just move on to the next woman.
Yeah, I guess by ruin his life, I more mean just be back to that place he was in season four where he was miserable and lonely and swimming. That's how I always associate that with swimming.
You bring up a good point of his comparing it to him having affairs while he was with Betty. I think it's just like a completely different situation from that. Like, we didn't really see him have like... He had women that he would regularly sleep with, but it wasn't like they were like the one girl he was cheating on his wife with. Like, he would just kind of make his way from acquaintance to acquaintance, have this person, you know, bring him to a loft in the village to smoke weed or just, you know, finger bang some woman up against the, you know, at the wall of a restaurant. It's just, this seems to be something more of relationship, being that it's both under her nose, in almost literally, in the apartment below them, and it just... it just seems different. Like, it's on a whole different level than any affair that he's had on this show before. And I was worried about what his motivations are, whether or not that means he actually really does care about her, that he's not cheating on her with anybody while he's cheating on his wife with her, or what his endgame is here. Is he looking to make a swap? Is he looking, you know, to have a key party in this apartment? Maybe next New Year's can, you know, be a swinger party.
Are you suggesting a Mad Men wife swap crossover here?
Possibly.
Matt D. Weiner would definitely go for that. He doesn't take what he makes as gospel.
Well, I think it's just Don at the end of last season, he gave that whole what is happiness speech. You know, it's just the moment before you want more happiness. And it's just kind of the only thing that he knows makes him happy is when he's having these affairs. So that's why he got into it. As to whether or not he likes her, I still really can't tell. I guess we'll find out more as it goes on. But I think that'd be interesting if it kind of came back to bite Don in that way, where he did start to like her but more than just as the escape.
Do you think that these affairs are actually making him happy? Like, just think about what he said to Sylvia at the end of the first episode, where he's like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah, I want to stop doing this.
What do you think he meant by, I want to stop doing this?
Yeah, the question could also be, does he mean I want to stop doing this, like I want to be with you and not? But then this episode, he said none of this is happening.
Yeah.
He said this is all in our head. So I think, and it was on the nose. I actually had a little bit of an issue with the flashbacks, like I said earlier. But they were trying to show how he completely disassociates sex and love.
Right. Or women from anything.
Yeah, women from being something that can bring him real fulfillment. And I think that they're just exploring that idea that it used to be what Don doesn't know who he is, and they still explore that identity thing all the time. He doesn't know how to be happy. He doesn't know what will make him happy.
He just doesn't know what he wants.
He has a friend for the first time we've ever seen in the entire show, and he's sleeping with his wife.
Yeah.
And you can even imagine, if confronted by the guy, he wouldn't feel bad. He'd be like, oh, sorry. Like, you shouldn't have let her do that.
Yeah, here, take another camera.
Yeah.
Get off my ass.
And that's why that whole, as much as I didn't like some of the on-the-nose prostitute stuff, I thought that him, the
you just a jiggle. Him giving her money after sleeping with her?
No, I that was for me. I meant the flashback specifically, but I loved the just a gigolo and him, the song that played while he sat and that image. That whole thing that it really said a lot about Don and what, there just doesn't seem to be happiness for him.
Yeah. I get you.
Speaking of kind of, I don't know. I had a segue for this, but I just forgot what it was. So,
speaking of Game of Thrones.
What do you guys... No, I wasn't going to go to Game of Thrones yet. Yeah, speaking of dragons. So what do you guys think of Peggy so far in her new job?
Love it. She's been the highlight for me of the season so far.
Really?
Yes, I loved her being Don. Like, she's season one Don, it feels like.
I think she's trying to be, but, like, she's kind of self-conscious about it because she was pretty upset by getting that odor joke, and she kept asking, you know, she kept trying to, in this episode, not as much in the first one, where she's trying to show her workers that she's not
as bossy
as she came off with.
I think she's trying and failing to be Don, honestly. I don't think she's pulling it off, and that turns me off from her storyline.
See, I don't agree at all. I don't think she's failing. I think she's maybe failing in the sense that she's self-conscious about it. But I think professionally, she's that good. Like, I love that she's that successful. And she's just a nicer person, basically. She's more prone to be worried about alienating her coworkers and stuff just because Don just literally doesn't give a crap. I think that it's very interesting to see her just, like, rejecting pitches and saying things like, if you can't tell the difference between an idea and the execution of an idea, then you're useless to me. She's not saying those things to act like Don. I think she's truly learned from Don. Like, that's just truly how she is as a professional now.
See, and I feel like I can't tell if this was in another episode, but I feel like that's just something Don said to her, so that's what she's saying to somebody else, and she's kind of faking her way through it. Like, I don't...
That's interesting.
To me, it's not genuine. Vibe. Like, based on what we've seen from Peggy, like, I know we've only seen her from the other side of the desk, but it seems like a facade, everything that she's doing. Like, she's not for real.
That's interesting. I feel like it's very genuine, and she almost can't help it. but because she's different than Don as a person, is the reaction she gets from it bothers her, whereas it doesn't bother Don at all. He doesn't. He likes people being afraid of him. Peggy doesn't.
That's why she's failing at it.
I guess she's failing in the sense that it's bothering her, but I don't think that she's doing anything to be like Don. I think that she's truly learned that this is how you do this job, and it's very organic, but the reaction... We're seeing how a regular person reacts to filling that role.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. It's like, I feel like she's only seen that role played through Don, and she doesn't know anything else, so that's what she's doing, and it seems disingenuous to me.
Okay. I guess we agree in theory. We just, you think it seems disingenuous. I think it seems very organic that that's how she'd be.
Yep.
I think it's understanding that that's the way that she's being. I think... I'm agreeing with Jeff here, though, that she's just trying to be
gang up on
Don. I'm not ganging up on you. She's trying to be Don, but obviously she's not. Because if Don got that tip about ketchup, I think he would have been on it in an instant, where she was, you know, questioning the loyalty of using that information that she got.
Have you seen Stan's beard? I would not betray that guy. He's the man.
I guess Don wouldn't have a friend either, though, so it wouldn't really matter.
No, Don definitely has no friends, and if he did, he'd sleep with their wives.
But he does give them cameras.
That's true.
He didn't pay for them.
No, but he didn't have to give them a camera. Even that felt like that felt like an exchange. Like, this is, I get to have sex with your wife in exchange for this camera. You don't know that you're agreeing with it, but you are.
Written on the inside of that box was... you're taking acceptance of this camera, you are allowing me to sleep with your wife.
that actually is in all codex.
All right, do we have any closing thoughts on Mad Men before we move on to Game of Thrones?
I think we covered it.
No, just a heads up, we're about like 42 minutes in.
Oh, okay, so let's be speedy and then wrap it up.
Okay, so Jeff, you saw the premiere of Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
But you haven't watched past episodes?
I haven't watched the second season.
That's incomprehensible. It must be incomprehensible.
That's exactly how I would describe the show. But I enjoy it. Like, I just...
That was like, clever.
To me, it's just, like, fun to watch. Like, I feel like there's such a barrier to entry with the show. Like, even when I did start from the beginning, like, I'm like, who is this person? Is this the person I thought we were talking about? Oh, wait, that's somebody else. And it just kind of took it from there, and I was very into it. I just didn't have the time to catch up or make...
That's something that I think I'm just naturally, I've always had a little bit of a knack for. Maybe it's because, like, when I was younger, I was reading Lord of the Rings and stuff like that. So I'm a little more... And I was always reading, like, fantasy and stuff as a kid. So I'm a little more like, this insane name and the background politics of this insane name. But I don't think you need to watch the show on that level, as you're saying. I think you can just watch it and be like, this is insane.
It's a very enjoyable show just to pick up on. Also, having watched, like, the beginning of the series and now picking it up again. And they go back and forth between so many different storylines that I'm kind of like, hey, I wonder what happened to this person. Is this person dead? Did they get killed?
Yeah,
I heard there were dragons. Where are the dragons?
You should watch it the second season at some point.
Oh, I will.
It's very good.
I'm not even sure I've seen all of the first. I have no idea.
This is like that time when you weren't sure if you watched like an entire season of Friday Night Lights as you were watching it.
Oh, that turned out I definitely did watch that and everything came back to me. This time,
how long did you watch the entire season through, and then you're like, "Oh, yeah, I did see all of that," or did it like click
at
some point?
Like, I would skip like two episodes at a time and be like, "Was I here or was I here?" Still haven't watched the fifth season of that, by the way. Gotta get on that.
You gotta do that because that finished a while ago.
Yeah.
So let's briefly touch on the newest episode, which I thought was I'm just moving us along.
The newest episode of Friday Night Lights
of Game of Thrones, which I thought was awesome, really great episode.
Yes. Why did you think it was so
I thought that it was one of the like, most brutal episodes they've done and easily the funniest episode. There were three separate comedy scenes in a show that is very grim. There was the moving the chairs around the table scene. There was the opening with the trying to light the boat on fire. And there was this the Podrick, the squire of Tyrion, coming back his four-way with the prostitutes where they gave the money back. The whole way that scene played out and was written just... I've never laughed so hard from Game of Thrones, which usually just has me cringing and like feeling terrible for characters I've grown to like. And there was plenty of that in this episode, but I thought that that it just did. It showed how the wide breadth of characters and stuff that this show can just deliver so much entertainment per episode just by jumping around to all these different really interesting plots.
And the comedy of that, the one scene, just the reveal of just like one girl after another coming out, and the, what's his name, Podrick? The names, you can be good with the names, I'm not.
I'm okay with the names. Podrick is the kid's name.
The kid's name, yeah. Just the reveal of just one woman coming out after the next was probably what I found funniest about this episode. But yeah, it had some funny scenes, which is, this might be the first time that it's had some humor in it.
Other than like Tyrion and Jaime making wisecracks.
Right. Well, that comes with every episode. But you brought up Jaime, so got to go to what is probably...
Spoilers, everybody.
Especially
the most memorable part of this episode.
Oh, have you not watched the episode?
No.
Oh, we're going to talk about it.
I heard that.
Spoilers for everybody, including Jeff.
Yeah, let's not spoil Mad Men. Let's only give spoiler alerts for the one show out of the
let's
three.
Let's be honest, it's not easy to spoil Mad Men. Like, there's not much you can, like...
Well, Bates, we kind of spoiled a lot.
Yeah, we did. We don't usually worry about spoilers. We kind of we say it when we post the stuff. Like, we talk about the episode.
Nobody.
I just, this is like, Game of Thrones is a much more, like, event-driven show than Mad Men, which is just like...
Oh, absolutely.
Roger said that was the deftest self-immolation I've ever seen. Like, that's the closest you can get to spoiling Mad Men.
Someone would be like, Roger's mother died in that episode. He'd be like, well, I don't need to watch that one.
Oh, spoilers!
That wraps up that episode for me. But anyway, the big event here in this episode, obviously, was Jaime having his hand just brutally chopped off at the end
so
of that episode.
Far, breakout star of this season.
Oh, yeah. No question.
He's owned this season so far. I feel like, is Jaime Lannister, the Kingslayer. He got his hand chopped off, his right hand, after we've heard about how he's the greatest fighter in the world, and all we've ever wanted to see is him throw down with some people, and we're never going to get to see it now. It's really, you feel terrible for him in every sense. He's so likable in such a roguish way when you should hate him because he paralyzes children and gets our main characters killed and sires bastard kings. But you just, like, he's just so likable. He saved Brienne from getting raped. He just...
Right, yeah, why did you think he did that?
I think he's not a terrible guy. I think he's not a terrible guy, basically. He's just a guy who survives and does... He's, as Jeff and I would always say from Lost, he's surviving, which is funny because he kind of looks like...
Surviving.
Surviving. But he kind of looks like Sawyer. And
oh, he does. Wow.
Yeah. He's more handsome than Sawyer, which is hard. But,
You're in love with the Kingslayer.
Yeah, he's a very layered guy. Like, he's genuinely in love with his sister, but he's also... And he had this genuine thing as a child where he was dyslexic, basically, and his dad just forced him to read for 4 hours a day until he learned how to read out of order. And he even retold that story a little bit in this episode. And
so we end up liking him? Like, from what I saw in the first season, like...
No, he's... Yeah. His transition.
It's hard to believe after
his transition into likability too.
Sleeps
Jeff,
with
is,
his sister
not
and then pushes a kid out the window.
It's also not one of redemption. Like, he doesn't do it. He's just so charming. Like, by the force of sheer charisma, you can't help but really enjoy him. And he's also written in a layered way where you're like, okay, this guy's not totally evil. He's just this guy who'll kind of just do what he's got to do in this messed up world.
I gotcha. And have sex with his sister.
Yeah, and like, yeah, father the king, evil. Kings and such. But yeah, his hand getting chopped off was just... It just has this crazy air of, like, taking him in an even more interesting, sad direction. And it was a big moment in a cool way. It's not even that much to say about it. It was just, like, it was a jaw-dropper. And a show that has lots of complex stuff, it's nice to have moments like that that you can kind of, like... Breaking Bad is the best at that, at having, like, run... Like, moments like that that you can just almost screen cap. You could do that with this moment, which I really liked. And it was just a big, like, big Facebook status is up moment, which I like that experience when I watch TV week to week.
Well, it's also dangerous if you don't watch the show live. So you got to be – because I usually watch it an hour or two after, and I'm like, I can't go online because there's going to be someone out there that literally says what happens online. You're like, you're a jerk.
OMG, but, can't believe Jaime got his hand cut off.
Exactly. Like, they have to brag that they watched the episode.
Can't believe Don submarined the Jaguar pitch. Spoilers.
Let's switch to another big part of this episode with Daenerys trading away one of her dragons.
I don't buy it.
There's something up with that, right?
She's going to do one of three things. She's going to immediately have her new slave army kill everybody. Yeah. She's going to have her dragon kill everybody. Or she just knows that in like a couple years, the dragon's just going
to come back.
Wait, so did she trade a dragon or she traded a dragon egg?
No, the dragon hatched. They hatched at the end of season one.
Okay. definitely didn't see that. No, but even if they did hatch, there could have been other dragon eggs, you jerk.
No.
Oh, okay, that's a good point.
Oh.
So the show's not that slow where she's still carrying around these
eggs. No, I knew that they hatched. I'm just saying maybe she found more eggs.
No.
Okay. So, but I would definitely think that she just is telling the dragon to kill her. How could you trade a dragon? Like, are they just like, oh, yeah, whoever is my owner, I'm going to be loyal to them?
That's the idea. Well, that's the thing, is how much can you like, they can keep it in a cage, I guess.
If only somebody would make a movie how to train a dragon.
That's
so we can understand.
Something that we should probably pitch.
Okay. I'll get DreamWorks on the line.
Yeah, you get DreamWorks. I don't think that they need something that they can compete with Pixar with. Let's do it.
Okay.
And then we'll do something. We'll put it on Cartoon Network after that, a little mini-series.
Perfect.
Okay, Vinny, let's not get ahead of ourselves. We're getting a little big for our
break. If it's successful.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Let's not submarine it before it starts. This isn't the Jaguar pitch. Call back. Let's keep moving.
Okay. So trading away a dragon. Also, one of the friends...
She's great, by the way.
Oh, Daenerys?
Oh, she's just better and better. Her plot is always good.
See, I didn't think it was that good last year, but... I guess. I thought it was kind of slow and took us away from everything else that was good.
We're on the record as talking about this, so I actually felt that way too. Rewatching it in a row on HBO Go, I enjoyed it much more because it didn't feel as like dragged out. But yeah, last season was a little bit of a placeholder for her. But I feel like she's back. Like season one, Daenerys is back.
Right.
We should probably start wrapping up. What are you
This is one of our lengthier podcasts.
Yeah, we're trying out a new format, everybody. You might tell the better sound quality, and it allows us.
Hopefully.
So we're going a little crazy. Or you can't hear a word we're saying. We'll find out. But yeah, Jeff, Vinny, why don't you give us some final thoughts, some of your final thoughts on the episode, and what you're looking forward to for the season?
Well.
Don't sound so happy.
I'm pretty much exhausted with my thoughts here, but I am enjoying what this episode focused on is what I've been enjoying so much about this third season so far, and that's Jaime and Daenerys. So hopefully we get a lot more of that coming forward. I've always been interested in the White Walkers just from the mystery standpoint of them. So we'll get more of them coming forward. I think a lot of exciting stuff. Finally, winter is coming. We've been hearing about winter since the very beginning, and I think it's finally here.
Yeah, now they're saying summer's over, so.
Yeah, they're saying different ways to tell us that winter is coming.
So, yeah, I think that, I don't think there's that much left to say.
I would like to thank you guys for having me on the show.
Jeff,
very
anytime.
Appreciate this. Yeah, let's do it again soon.
Come on and talk about Bates Motel with us anytime.
Maybe I could catch up on Game of Thrones and then finally add to that conversation.
We would be happy to have you. And you should come on. We'll do a summer movie podcast soon.
Okay, absolutely. I'd love to produce it.
Yeah, there's big stuff coming up. We can maybe we'll keep everybody posted on our How to Train Your Dragon pitch.
Okay,
how that goes.
I'll work on the script. Progress. I'll get you one.
Yeah, get us a spec script and we'll talk.
And okay. I'll get the dragons.
I don't know if we're gonna need them, but you go do that.
Oh, live action?
You were thinking animated. Oh yeah, you said DreamWorks. Sorry.
DreamWorks can branch out. They've done real stuff.
If you give DreamWorks dragons and tell them the deal is they can have them if they make a live-action movie, I don't think they're saying no.
That's a good point.
You know DreamWorks has made live-action movies, right?
Well, yeah.
Okay. I didn't know that, but I believe you.
Okay.
Have they?
There many.
So, like, most of the movies?
Probably, like, 75%.
Oh, yeah.
Give me a DreamWorks movie.
Oh, there's tons, I'm sure.
Oh, Gladiator, Beautiful Mind. Okay, you're not lying here.
No, 75% might have been a little low.
But they've never had dragons.
As far as we know.
that they've never put dragons on screen.
They've never taught us how to train them.
That debatable.
Well, in a live action movie.
We are off the rails. Let's thanks everybody for listening. Yeah. And we will do our best to be on next week.
Okay, have a good night, guys. Thanks for having me again.